Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Tandy here, and you are back with us listening to the Beer Ladies podcast. I'm joined today by my good friend Christina, and we have got a very special guest for you today. We've got Apiwe. Now, if you don't know who Apiwe is, don't worry. You will soon, because I have a whole intro. Even though you could speak for just, and you could speak for the full hour on Apiwe's achievements and her involvement in the beer industry, we're going to glaze over all of it and introduce Apiwe in a minute. But what we just want to do first is, you know, remind you all that we are on all the social medias, whether you are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Mastodon, Instagram. I think I've covered all of them. We're at Beer Ladies Pod, wherever you get your podcasts, on all the socials, and we're at beerladiespodcast.com if you want to find out all the links, or if you want to go back and look at our gift guide from last week, because that was a fun one. Gifts for the beer lovers and the brewers alike. Right. We are welcoming Apiwe Mosani Mawela to our podcast, our very first African brewster onto the Beer Ladies podcast. And it's about damn time, since Apiwe is from South Africa, as am I, and it has been a long time coming. Now, for those listening at home, Apiwe is probably the most well-known female brewer in Africa, let alone just South Africa. Not just because, but very much part of, she's the first Black woman to have ever owned a microbrewery in the country, yeah. Which was a really big achievement at the time and still owns one. We're going to get to that. She's the current owner of Tolokazi Brewery, founder of Brew for Change, which we'll talk more about as well. All around beer nerd. I mean, Apiwe is a BJCP judge, the chair of the Institute of Brewing and Distilling in Africa, has a national diploma in clear fermented beverages. I'm sure we'll touch on that too. And regularly judges beer competitions and speaks at conferences all over the world. Welcome, Apiwe. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Hi, Tandy. Hi, Christian. How are you guys doing?
Very, very well. All the better for having you on our pod. Now, we'll get to a little bit about your journey and, you know, telling us about all of your current projects and how you got into it in a minute. But let's go around the room and just say, what is everybody drinking? And Apiwe, let's start with you as our guest of honor. Tell us what you're drinking. Show us what it is.
because I knew you ladies would be having beer, I just wanted to also showcase my other side. So I'm today having my Tolokazi cider. It's a rooibos and berry cider. So rooibos is one of the South African indigenous teas. So it's a tea infused cider.
Beautiful.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, look at that. Super color. Refreshing. The color is gorgeous. So for those who are listening and not watching, it's almost got like a deep sort of red hue. I guess that's from the rooibos. Roy means red. So red bush. Yeah.
Yes. Ah, you haven't amazing. Forgotten your, you haven't lost your roots, huh?
Never. Never.
What are you guys having?
Right. Christina, what are you drinking, friend?
So I have this Dre Fontaine. It's the Intense Rude.
which I smuggled back with me last time I was in Bruges. And I am, you know, hoarding away like a dragon for Christmas.
Love it. And I've got a new to me beer. One of my colleagues who is from the Czech Republic or Czechia, named Jan, thank you, Jan, brought me a beer back last week. So I'm delighted to try it. It's called Hazy Citra, and it's by a brewery called Permon. I'm not familiar with them, but anyone that's been to Prague or to the Czech Republic, you know, you often just associate lagers and especially lovely dark lagers with them. But there is a big craft movement happening over there and lots of different styles coming out. So I'm really keen to try it. And I mean, look at this color. It's hazy. Oh. It's just looks beautiful. Lovely head. It was very frothy when I poured it.
And?
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's very nice. It's very juicy. Yes, Tandy approved. That's it. Okay, so Apiwe, let's start a little bit at the beginning, because, you know, you've got a whole life journey of beer history to go through. But tell us how you got into beer to begin with.
Yeah, so my journey into beer actually started from the love of science. Not a nerd. I know you said I'm a nerd. I don't think myself as a nerd, but I enjoyed medicine and biology in high school. My parents wanted me to become a doctor. And I think that's also because, you know, I grew up in the Eastern Cape, which is like a rural side of South Africa. So both my parents were teachers. So it was more like they didn't know any other careers. So like if you were good in medicine science, you had to be a doctor or you had to be a lawyer. You know, there was like the normal career paths. So I was fortunate enough that I went to an open day at one of the universities when I was still in high school. And that's where I got introduced to the study of biotechnology. Then I kind of actually they had like a can of beer on display and wine and cheese and yogurt. And for me, it was more the, you know, the interesting, like I didn't know that as a scientist, you could be involved in food products. I've always thought, you know, like scientists, we think they were lab coats and goggles and microscope the whole day. So I found that quite interesting. And at that time, one of the big companies that employed people within biotechnology was South African Breweries. I applied for a bursary, got in, and fast forward, actually when I was doing my honors year, it was the same time ACB was trialing a project in South Africa, introducing a beer study at university level. So I was part of the first 10 people, and that's how I got the title of being the first person in the country to have completed a brewing qualification. Because before that, everyone was either doing the UK-based or US-based qualifications or German-based. So I was like the first one to actually do a local brewing qualification. And then I worked for South African Breweries, trained as a brewer, qualified brewer, became a brewmaster within the company. And fast forward, I think 8-9 years later, decided to leave. Actually, before that, I think it was 2010, 2011, that's when there was a boom in, as you know, Tandy, in the South African craft beer scene. And at that time, SAB wanted to probably like try and see if there was something in there. So I was appointed as a craft beer specialist within the group. And that's for me actually where I think the craftsmanship, the craft side of beer came about. Before that, I was trained to brew the mainstream beers. In that role, I got introduced to the home brewing community. I was able to brew different festivals. And as I started making more and more beers, people were like, no, but I think your beers are so good. Why are you not doing this by yourself? And I somehow decided to listen to those people. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey though. I'll end there before I get carried away.
Brilliant. I mean, you started out within that ownership space at Brewhogs. And for anybody in South Africa, Brewhogs was it owned a chain of pubs, actually. But because there was a brewery attached to that, you know, all the beers were in-house, locally brewed beers by Apiwe. And what was really interesting about them was that they were all lagers, which I thought was awesome. Red lagers and dark lagers and light lagers and, you know, different almost flavors. And
remember, we even have an IPL, the India Pale
Lager.
Everyone was into IPAs at the time. And then that's how I got to be known as the queen of lagers, apparently.
Yes. That's right. That's right. But then soon after that, you know, after a few years of that, you decided to, in fact, move away from that, go into Brewster's Craft, which was a company that had a few different sort of arms to it. One of them was setting up a contract brewery. And I thought it was a really interesting model because, you know, building a brewery and starting up a brewery is a really expensive endeavor. And Apiwe, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of your strategies was to get other brewers who needed their beers brewed contracting with you to help, you know, fund those costs as well as get good beers out there, and with a strong preference to lager, or I might be misremembering.
No, you're not far off. But actually, when I left SAB in 2015 and joined the guys at Brewhouse, we actually started the company. So I was heading up the brewing, the operations of the brewery, and while they focused on the pubs. I actually, at the same time, started my Camp Brewster's Craft. Because, I mean, for me, what I realized was, as much as the industry was growing in South Africa, it was still lacking a lot in terms of the formalized training. And we still are, you know, where I felt, you know, as we're growing, to keep up with that growth, we're going to need a pool of qualified brewers. And at that time, which is still partly the case now, a lot of the guys were mainly home brewers who had started, who had read 1-2 books, watched you know, a YouTube channel here and there, brewed 1-3 beers. Their friends think the beer is the best thing ever, and then they decide to start a brewery, you know. And you find that obviously, not to talk anyone down, but you know, when once you start having sulfurs, like obviously now you don't know where to start, you don't understand that when we talk of his management, his health, what does that mean? Viability, you know, like all these technical terms that, you know, as brewers we kind of throw around. So Brewster's Craft for me was to kind of close that gap. Started off as a offering training and consulting for the craft brewers, and also did training for the big breweries also because of my background. And I got, the company was accredited as a training provider by the education, South African education, what do they call it? Framework, I don't know what they call it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, so when, as I started helping people with the training consulting, I helped people develop their recipes, help them put together business plans. You know, some of them came back and said, okay, fine, great. I have what is a great recipe. You've done a test batch for me. You know, we've got this on paper, but my investors want me to prove concept, you know, where is a product sold? How many of it is being sold? You know, so they kept on asking, but where can I brew it? Can you help us now officially launch a product in the market? So the idea of actually expanding Brewster's Craft to include the brewery started from that point, to say, you know what, to then offer a full turnkey solution where I help with the, some people come with the ideas, I help them, you know, make them make sense, help them put together a business plan. And I always thought, you know, and that I wouldn't have my own brand. I was content with helping other people. And I always, you know, I always make the analogy that, you know, as ladies, we always, when we're young, we're like, I don't want to have my own kids, you know, my sister's kids are like my own, my sister's like my firstborn. But as you grow older, and then, you know, and you actually appreciate life more, and that when you start having your own child, you actually, your life, the outlook on life changes. And I think for me, that's kind of like how it has become, because then when I then started looking at the idea of setting up the brewery, then I started toying around with the idea of having my own brand, And as I started talking to people about, you know, this business model that I'm thinking of putting together, I presented it to one of the government agencies. And the idea was that this place will be an incubation hub, basically, a place where entrepreneurs will come in, launch their brands. I'll help them because I have the technical know-how. So they would then just be entrepreneurs who would start brands and grow brands and focus on the sales and marketing, where I would make sure that the product is obviously of highest quality. So yeah, that was the idea. They believe in my idea. They gave me 10 million rand to put the brewery together. And that was in 2018. But yeah, and then we had one of the challenges we face, especially as craft brewers in South Africa, and actually talking to a few people, it's not only our issue where, you know, licensing is an issue. So I had to, as much as I had the offtakes, I had everything signed, sealed, and delivered, but one of the key requirements was that I needed to have my license sorted out. So that took about 8 months to get my liquor manufacturing license. During that time, I couldn't trade. And because obviously I had then at that time left Brewhawks, resigned as a shareholder there to focus on my new project. So I had to kind of pay rental for close to a year without any income. It was quite a tough time, but fast forward 8 months later, got my piece of paper, which meant my funds were being released, ordered my equipment. There was New Year's in China, so that was another few weeks of delay. Fast forward 2019, I think the brewery landed in the south, in Durban by the harbor around just after Easter. 2019, obviously then we had to move it out from Durban to Joburg, get the brewery ready for the equipment, installation, commissioning. I think we did our first commission brews around July 2019, started production probably like around August, September. And then I employed people because then, you know, we're getting ready for 2020. I said I needed to start paying the loans back. I had eight staff members, seven of which were female, by the way, you know me. and yeah, March 2020, you know, the world just went on a dead
stop. The world went to shit.
Yep. Yeah, so it was a tough time because at that time I just had like all these young people that were all so eager and excited. You know, and I was due to start repaying my loans because of all the other delays. And in South Africa, we had the toughest our government dealt with the pandemic. I think probably when it relates to alcohol, the toughest because we had total ban on we couldn't manufacture. We were actually banned from making the product, from distributing it, from selling it. It was like a total shutdown. We couldn't even sell online. We couldn't. So that was like very tough times. I launched a non-alcoholic product. I tried to change the brewery to making sanitizers. It was a very emotional roller coaster period.
I can imagine.
Which fast forward, 2021 closed down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for those who didn't know, but in South Africa, the lockdown really was very severe. So no alcohol, and everybody was locked in their houses, you know, similar restrictions to us, except that we could sit at home and get drunk. We could get Craft Central or McHugh's or whoever to deliver beer to us. And we were all, you know, living our best lives at home, not having to commute to work and being able to drink through it. In South Africa, everybody was locked down. It was complete prohibition. And, you know, a lot of what happened as well was that people started making their own. So not just home brewers. And there was quite some innovations that went on during this time, you know, in terms of selling wort instead of beer. You know, there were lots of interesting things that happened.
So, we all tried means to survive, yeah, just to get at least like whatever sense can come in, just to, because after the first lockdown, after that, they sort of like relaxed them. There was a point where we could go to work to brew, but we still couldn't sell, you know. So, and then there was a time where they opened restaurants, but then they were not allowed to sell alcohol, and then people got creative there with teacups and all that. It was crazy.
South Africa is a special place for this. But look, out of it, you know, you started Tolokazi, you started Tolokazi through it, and whether you closed down the brewery or not, the brand has survived. Tell us a little bit about the brand and, you know, what it means to you and where the name comes from and all the lovely things we want to know.
Yeah, so Tolokazi actually is, like I said earlier, you know, with the brewery, that's when actually the idea of having the brand came about. And the plan was that it was going to officially launch in, like, I think March 2020. You know, we had done the label designs and everything. So when with the lockdowns, one of the most difficult things for me was to give projections to my funders, to say, you know, because a lot of the brands I was brewing for were very fairly new, you know, so none of them were like well established in the market. So in terms of making sure that after the bans we'll be able to continue. So that's when I realized that actually, you know what, had I had a strong enough brand in the market, you know, before, if my model was the other way around and I had a strong enough brand in the market, that I was able to push more volume, that, you know, it was able to carry the brewery, maybe I wouldn't have closed. So that's where then I decided, you know what, let me maybe focus my energies. I mean, what was happening was happening. There was nothing I could do about it. You know, I just told myself that, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic was a global thing. It was not that someone, you know, in South Africa, we believe in Africa, actually, we believe in witchcraft and all this. You're like, no, but it's not like there's some person who's climbing some broom somewhere who's just decided that he's going to make sure my life is miserable. That it was just something that just happened and no one saw it. And it's there, you know, there's nothing much we can do but just remain positive. So I think for me, I just kind of mentally switched my thinking and said, you know what, let me focus on something and channel the energy on that. And for me, that was Tolokazi, the brand. And so Tolokazi is my clan name. So clan names in the African context is like higher than a surname. So even though my surname is Musani, and it's Mawela because I'm married to Mawela, who's my husband, my husband's family. But you keep your clan because that links to the ancestors. So I'm very proudly rooted in my traditions. So I wanted to celebrate that. And because the other reason for me was because when a woman, as much as you change your surname, but as a brewer, you always keep your clan name. And most of the time, the brewers aren't called or named after their clan names. So if I was in the 10th century, living somewhere in deep Africa, and I was bringing beer, people call me Tolokazi. They'll probably say we're going to drink Tolokazi. And for me, that's why I chose the name, because the brand for me celebrates women brewers, and our label, those who've ever had the privilege of coming across our label, we actually talk about the brand story, where the brand pays homage to female brewers, past, present, and future, a past being the old grannies who've been brewing beers in Africa for centuries without knowing the science, without really understanding. They had their own understanding of what they were doing because that knowledge was being passed on from generation to generation, and they perfected that African science, if you want to call it that. Present being people like me who are now living in the current era, who are facing our own challenges as women, and the future being the women who will obviously come after us, and it is our duty to make sure that when they come in,
we would have changed certain things. So for me, the brand is around that, is around also celebrating we are as Africans, showcasing to the world at large that, you know, we exist, we make great beers, and that's why I use a lot of African ingredients. So I've got a sorghum pilsner, which uses sorghum cereal as part of the grain bill. I use only South African hops. I've got an African pale ale, which uses South African hops. And then my cider is, I've got the rooibos berry cider, and I'm doing actually a marula cider in the new year.
Yum. Yum.
Yes.
Tandy, you want to bring some, back?
Yes, I do. I think I will bring some back.
So I have so many questions, but I want to start with my extreme jealousy of the subscribers of Beer 52 who who got 200,000 cans of your beer that was produced in Croatia and then sent to them. And I read that and I am... Yes, very jealous. And like, can we do this in Ireland? How can we do
No, that was actually because you know, I think for me, I'm quite the type of person I am. I don't bottle things in. So when I was going through all these emotional states, and not that I was venting, but I was sharing, and just like, you know, that was my way of dealing, and I think my therapy, and I used to post a lot on social media, especially LinkedIn, and just because at that time I thought, you know, as the world, people need to know, you know, what's happening in South Africa, you know, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected us, and what was, as things were unfolding, and as we went through the different lockdowns. So apparently I had a connection with one of the CEO of BR52, which I actually didn't know. So yeah, he sent me a message and he's like, you know what, he's been following my story and what can he do to help, you know, is there anything they can do? And we started talking about possibly having the beer as part of in their mixed case. But obviously then, you know, transporting beer would have made no sense. So they found a brewery in Croatia that was willing to brew for me on my behalf. And they connected me to the brewmaster there. And then the other challenge was getting the ingredients across. So we had to kind of like, you know, figure out the best way to do that. But on BF52, I mean, when I went through the comments and the ratings, I was like, oh my God, you guys. And on Untapped, I was like, oh, this is actually quite nice.
I was quite jealous.
I know the beer's good. I know the beer's good, but you know, sometimes you like, you know, to get I mean, the few comments which were like, I don't like a Pilsner, so I'm like, oh.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I was quite jealous because I knew that deal was happening and I knew that the cans were available through Beer 52, but they don't ship to Ireland. I still messaged Apiwe and said, Apiwe,
yes.
Here. But yeah. Anyway, let sleeping dogs lie. We're going to have to find a way to get Tolokazi into Ireland. But yes, so that definitely happened. That was great. And well done you for getting out into the broader world. I mean, it's challenging. You know, South Africa's very far down in terms of Europe-centric the world. Yeah.
No, we like, Africa is far down. But that's why we are here.
Mm.
Yeah, so speaking about the beer, you talked a bit about historical and traditional brewing techniques, and I wondered if you could just talk a little bit more about that, because the historian in me just, I want to know everything. So...
So obviously this is based on what I've heard, because the sad part is that, you know, we don't have a lot of the stuff documented, obviously based on the history of the country. But, you know, for me, I grew up in the village, but I never actually knew how to brew beer, interestingly enough, because brewing beer in our culture is something that's done by women only.
And it's typically, it's a recipe that will be passed on from generation to generation. Whether there's a funeral, there's a wedding, you know, whatever ceremony, whenever there's something that that connects with the ancestors, it is a must that there must be a beer brewed. And if that beer ferments, it then means that the ancestors are happy. But if the beer doesn't ferment, and we know scientists why a brew not ferment, but culturally it means something didn't go right, there's a bad omen, you know, and. So for me, I used to, like, growing up as kids, you like see my mother and my grandmother doing it, like, whatever, you know, the old people. But for me, the interest in taking the pride in traditional African beer making actually came after I qualified as a brewer, when I did my diploma in brewing. And traditionally, as my parents are still also, as much as they're highly educated, they're still, like, very traditional. So when I passed my university, got my first job, got my first car, my dad called me up. He's like, "No, you have to come back home and do something to thank the ancestors because of all the blessings, you know, how mm-hmm. your life has just, things have been going very well." So traditionally, if I'm the one who's wanting to connect with ancestors, I need to touch something during the brewing process, whether you just fill the pot with water or you just help here and there, but you have to be present. So that it's part of how it's done. So when I went home, and as I was watching them, because now I had a different understanding because I just finished my diploma, I knew about malting and mashing and lautering. So everything, whenever I looked at what they're doing, and I'm like, "No, but, you know, you guys, that's like mashing." And then they will fill the water with their elbow. I'm like, "Why?" I'm like, because I knew then what it meant. And for me, seeing how the two are actually the same, the process is, the principles, the science behind it is exactly the same. I was like, "Wow, like, I should be knowing this. Why am I not knowing this?" And that's when I decided, you know what, I need to put more energy and focus and know more about it. And from that, I know, Tandy, I'm jumping onto one of your questions. Through my the nonprofit I started, Brew for Change, one of the key things I do also recently, I hosted a competition for Mgomboti Brewing, I realized that a lot of the young people, like my generation and younger, because we urbanized, we now stay in the big cities, we don't spend as much time in the village, which means that the tradition is not being passed on as it used to back in the days, because when we go home, we normally get there on like a Friday, because you have to work the whole week, so maybe you take off a Friday. And the brewing process takes a whole week. It starts on Monday for beer that has to be consumed on Saturday. So you're missing all that. So we're not having that being passed on, which when I looked at it, it's like probably in three generations to come, nobody will know how to brew our traditional African beer. So we would have lost that tradition. Therefore, you know, what then comes with that we can't, you know, we won't be able to connect the way our grandparents connected with our ancestors, and we lose our identity and we lose who we are. And that's sort of like that's a chapter in your book, my dear.
But I mean, Mgomboti is such an interesting beer. And I think the distinction, you know, when you're talking about the different qualifications that you've gotten along the way, one that you've often mentioned to me before is this sort of clear beer or clear beverage, as opposed to opaque, which is like Mgomboti. So could you tell us some of the differences between, you know, almost traditional South African beer and what a European-centric view of beer might be?
Mm. Yeah, so Mgomboti is mainly made with actually sorghum and maize. Those are the main ingredients. And traditionally, they never used to add yeast, and that was because it's like a wild fermentation, lambics, basically. So they would have this hut that was used as like the brewing room where only the brewer would go in there. And obviously in there, that's where you'd have your different microorganisms. Obviously back in the days, they didn't know this. They probably thought the gods were obviously blessing them with making sure that the beer ferments. But obviously with our modern day understanding that there was probably a lot of microorganisms in there that through selection have within became the ones that were able to make good beers for the people. So the product itself is, as much as we filter, but the filtering is more sieving. So it is depending on which parts of the continent you're from. And even in South Africa, we have the different tribes that all prefer different ways. Because the first step is actually more a lactic souring process, which is a natural sour, allowing the lactobacillus on the grain to actually do the souring. So some people would leave it for 2 days, some leave it for 3 days. So depending, some will do just a 1 day. So that all depends on obviously the level of sourness the people would typically like. And then once we've done the souring, we then boil, because we're using sorghum and maize, obviously, to gelatinize the grain. And then once it's cooled down, they will add another fresh bag of sorghum. Obviously, this will then come with the enzymes to break down the starch. Then you mix it with cold water, and then you leave it to ferment. And once it's done fermenting, we then sieve out the grain, and then it becomes this opaque. Some people, like if you've had like porridge, but it's not as thick as porridge, it's quite thin. And then in terms of the color, depending on the type of sorghum you use, some people use red sorghum, so it would have a pinkish color. Some people use white sorghum, so it's got a bit more white color. So it's all in the variations. And in different parts of the continent, they use millet. So it all, but basic principle or the basic recipe is very similar. And it, on taste, I mean, normally it ferments depending, like probably 2% alcohol. I know now people also add sugar just to up the alcohol levels.
I think it's very cool that you ran what certainly was a first for me was that first Mbotsi competition. I think that was great. I loved following that on social media and seeing how it got on.
You know, when we had the competition, you know, so this year I allowed people to also just our theme was Umlando. So Umlando means we want people to also link back to their roots, because we're all in Johannesburg, so it's a very mixed culture, you know. So it's no longer like, let's say for example, in one section of the country where it's predominantly a certain tribe, so everyone makes it the same way, whereas now we are all like in Joburg, everyone is like coming from that part of the country, that was coming from the north, from the south to the east. So one of the key things we did was also allow people to just sort of like introduce themselves and tell us more about, you know, the culture they're from. And what was very interesting for me was, which is something I would actually love at some point to probably pen down into something that would live on for longer, is the differences in the different cultures. I mean, we all put a blanket on it as Mkomboti, but, you know, just tasting from the different parts, even from the same tribe. Like I'm Xhosa, even from my own people, they make it differently. Like how my mom's side of the family makes it to my dad's side of the family, there's differences even there. And that is like, and all the beers come out great. And it's just one of those things that people do not, you know, there was never a science lecture given, but people just know what to do. They understand sterilization, that you, everything you touch, everything, when you start brewing, everything must, you boil the water first, and everything that's gonna get in contact with the beer has to be washed with that boiled water. And it's one of those things where, like my mom will say, you don't ask, you just do, because that's how it's done.
There's a lot of parallels between that and sort of Kvike or Norwegian farmhouse brewing and you know, all the kind of really old brewing where people didn't know exactly what was happening or they couldn't name it, but they knew that it had to be done that way because it was done that way. So there's lots of parallels all over the world. It's so cool.
Yeah, it is very cool.
No, I do have a question. So, well, more of a comment. So I've watched several of your interviews and you talk a lot about sort of the importance of supporting local and drinking local. And I just wondered if you wanted to just kind of expand on that a bit.
Yes, I am pro local. I think it's part of, you know, in South Africa specifically, you know, our industry, talking about craft beer industry, we follow a lot of the American trends and the European trends. You know, tend to also tell you everyone makes an IPA and we American style IPA and everyone wants to make it how we all think it's the way it should be in the US, or everyone wants to make a German Weiss. And for me, I always have this thing that if people are coming to our country, on our continent, to experience who we are and what we have to offer, I mean, we take them to the safaris, we take them to see the Big Five, we have African food cuisines, we dance, we've got our clothes, we've got all this, but at the end, when they have to have a beverage, then we give them Stella. Or Heineken, you know? And I'm like, but like, we have not completed that experience, the local experience, and that's something for me personally. I've been quite vocal in the industry to say, guys, we need to have our own identity. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we're all gonna brew that same thing, but we all need to have. People must come to South Africa and Africa and be like, oh my God, I had this beer. I'll probably never have it again unless I go back there. So now if you guys are gonna come here and have the German version, like, no, but you're not even German up here. What are you trying to do? Have you ever been to Germany to start off with to know what a German beer is supposed to taste like? But I'm here, you know, I know what an African beer tastes like because that's what I grew up on. And that's something that you guys do not know. So it is my duty then to make sure that I introduce you to that and you introduce me to your beers or your locals, and I do the same with mine. So I do that even outside of beer. I mean, I'm wearing a local made shirt.
So for those who are just listening, Apiwe, put it up again. I know it says, I am my ancestors'
wildest dreams.
Wildest dreams. There we go. I love that shirt. It's so cool. Yes. Oh, I love it. So, Apiwe, what is next for Tolokazi? What plans have you got in the works?
So, yeah, interesting times ahead. I think for me, it's continuing with just spreading what I call the gospel. the beer, craft beer in South Africa. I think that through doing talks through you know, attending the international beer judging, I think in that space I'm also able to, recently I was in Brazil earlier on, like last month, you know, seeing what they're doing, you know, and seeing how far they've gone. I've taken some learnings from that to say, you know, if I come back to South Africa, this is what I'm going to try to do because I've seen it there, and building those networks. And that is just for, I think, me wearing my many hats. That's just me on a personal brand perspective. But I think for Tolokazi also, you know, continuing building that network and continuing just putting our stamp in South Africa, and also having presence. It might not be physical presence across the world for now, but I think for me, what I want to do is make sure that when people come to South Africa, you know, Tolokazi is part of the South African experience. It's part of the African experience, that you come here, like we spoke about rooibos now. I mean, the first thing people would probably ask, what is rooibos?
then that opens up the conversation around rooibos. Is actually it's a bush, it's a tea bush that grows only in the Western Cape. It's indigenously South African. You know, you're never gonna find it anywhere else in the world. Then it opens up all those you know, those interesting talks about what makes South African unique. So it's not we're not only known about having lions as pets. You told them. No. We don't have lions as pets, guys. Sorry.
Nope. But it's lions as pets. We don't ride elephants to school. And we absolutely do have Wi-Fi and airports.
Yes. Thank you. I also see giraffes when I go to, like, I have to drive all the way to the parks to go see a giraffe, and it's also like quite a, oh my god, I just saw an elephant. So, but just to change the perception on Africa, you know, that, you know, we also have a lot to offer the world. We also have, you know, we deserve the sit on that table when people talk about global trends and beer, what is happening in the industry, that we need to say, oh yeah, we also doing this and that. We are also starting this trend.
I love it. And you mentioned Brew for Change earlier. So this is a nonprofit organization that you founded and help run. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Yeah, so I actually, before I officially registered the nonprofit, I had been doing a lot of stuff, because for me, I think the three main, I think I'll say passions or things that are core value to me, that is, and that links to who I am. So I always say to people, I'm a brewer first, who happens to be Black and who happens to be female, that the latter doesn't define who I am, but I do appreciate the fact that I'm a minority within a minority. And as a result, it is up to me and those who have been able to, you know, open certain doors to make sure that those doors remain open for those who follow, you know. So I am very pro anything that supports women in the industry and anything that supports Black people within the industry. So I felt that, you know, maybe because I've been doing quite a lot of stuff just on my own, that maybe if I then channeled it through the nonprofit company, it will also help in terms of getting the necessary support. I'm also very passionate about education, and because I also believe that, you know, I got the privilege of being aware of biotechnology and being where I am today because of someone decided to make sure that I knew. Like, I mean, if I had not gone to that open day, I would probably never have known about that study. I would have ended up becoming a doctor who didn't like becoming a doctor. And I probably would have been a miserable person. I would be having this with you.
The world is richer for that open day. Thank goodness for that day. You know?
So it's also something that that's quite close to my heart to go to schools and just I share my journey with the learners and just especially from the previously disadvantaged communities and say, you know what, guys, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter who your parents are, it doesn't matter your circumstances, whether you stay in a shack, whether your parents both passed away, whatever the circumstances, it should not matter. The world is only what you make out of it. There are so many opportunities that you just have to work hard. I mean, I summarized my story, but it was not, I didn't just wake up and these things happened. It was through a lot of hard work. So those are some of the things that are quite close to my heart and which I want to continue doing. Mm-hmm.
Love to hear it. So what's your favorite beer out of your own range? Mm. At the moment.
Depends on the mood. I think I'm enjoying I'm enjoying the Sorghum Pilsner now. So you also see on our social media, Dologa social media pages, or whether you go on our Instagram or TikTok or Twitter, I'm actually pushing that more. And the reason being, you know, I feel it's a beer that that talks to the wider demographics of the country. So if you are a white person who is into craft beer, you find it interesting because you've never had anything with sorghum before. Mm-hmm. And also for me, it's a crossover because a lot of people like sorghum, because immediately they think of the traditional beer. And I feel it's like a cross, it's something that could help, you know, just cross people over if they want to try it, but also make them aware of the traditional side of brewing. And then within the Black community, it's also something that's quite interesting for a lot of people, because when they think or when they hear sorghum or they see sorghum, they always think traditional, rural. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, this is actually a modern take to Umqombothi. This is, you know, I'm not saying we must forget who we where we come from, but you know, why are we not changing with the times and experiencing different tastes. So I'm enjoying playing around with this beer specifically and just educating people and allowing, because what I've also noticed is that once someone tries that, who is a purely mainstream beer drinker, they'll be like, no, this is actually quite different from my typical lager. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the conversation starts, you know. And then for me, I feel then that will make them, you know, be more open to trying out the next craft beer, because they had one that was not too far out to what they know. But at the same time, it had an element of being unique and different. Therefore, when they come across something else that is unique and different, they're probably going to try it. Mm-hmm. So it is something, it's a beer that, like I said earlier on, it appeals to both hardcore craft beer drinkers, someone who's just starting into craft, and somebody who's just purely mainstream. It can actually help further grow the industry. So I'm enjoying mm-hmm. playing around with it and pairing it with food. That's something I'm also going into now, beer pairings, and just educating people about beer.
That's amazing. So cool.
Yeah, for me, it's I'm enjoying, you know, it's one of those things, you know, when things happen as people, when bad things happen to you, you sometimes feel like the world is about to end. But you know, for me, I'm great. I think it had to happen. It was part of my journey. It had to happen because it's also given me a different look at life. I appreciate certain things more than I probably did. And I guess part of growing up, and I look forward to what the future brings and just, you know, connecting with everyone in the beer industry and not feeling like, because sometimes I would feel like I'm doing, like going in circles, like not moving forward. But when I get to a platform like this and hear you guys say all these wonderful things about me, I'm like, oh my God, actually, you know, I am doing something. So I do appreciate 100%.
Ah, love it. So for everybody listening at home, if you'd like to follow Apiwe or Tolokazi, there are a couple of handles you can take note of. So Apiwe herself is on Tolokazi_thebrewster on Instagram, but you'll probably find everything from there as well. You can look at Tolokazi the brand, so the beer brand, at Tolokazi Beer. They'll all be in the show notes anyway, so all the links will be there. The other one is the website. So tolokazibeer.co.za is the beer website, and all of the social links are there too. But as usual, they'll all be in the show notes below, and you can go and follow Apiwe and say hi. And if you're in South Africa, make sure that you stop in and, you know, try some of the Tolokazi beer. It would be fabulous to hear.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I might, hopefully by then I'll have my tap room, because that's one of the things that are happening 2023.
Ooh.
Opening up my own tap room. and I just want to have, I really want to have fun with the brand. 2023 for me is a time where the year that I just want to have as much fun and explore many things, because I want to make it more of an experiential brand, and see what happens thereafter.
Mm. That sounds amazing. I enjoy that shift from owning the brewery and the technical side and almost the physical space to owning the brand and owning the experience of a brand.
Like, that's a really so interesting journey. Eh?
Yes.
I love it. Yeah. Well, Apiwe, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. And Christina, you. Friend, always nice to chat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is great. Thank you so much for coming.
All right. Well, raise a glass. Thank you, Apiwe. We'll see you soon, my friend. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.